Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, you might have heard about the Broadway play Fela, about the larger-than-life Nigerian musician and activist Fela Kuti. But did you know his son, Femi Kuti, might be an even bigger star? He's here with us in a few minutes to talk about his latest album, Africa for Africa. But first, muses and metaphor. We've been hearing your poetic tweets on this program as part of our celebration of National Poetry Month. We've been asking you to send us poems that are no more than 140 characters through Twitter. We've received more than 500 responses from all over the country. Today, a tweet from Summer Boretsky of Phoenixville, Pennsylvania. Summer works as an analyst at a marketing company in King of Prussia, Pennsylvania. She also blogs about anxiety and panic for PsychCentral.com. Here's her tweet. Now remember, these are short, only 140 characters each, so listen up.
This is Summer Boretsky, and this is my tweet. The itch on my sneakered soul, laces too tight to bother. I walk on.
Like we said, these are short, so let's play it again.
The itch on my sneakered soul, laces too tight to bother. I walk on.
That's a poetic tweet by Summer Boretsky. If you missed any of our previous selections and you'd like to hear them, just go to the Tell Me More website, go to npr.org, click on the programs menu, and find Tell Me More.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris.
And I'm Melissa Block. This year, a familiar, exciting voice will be missing from broadcasts of the Kentucky Derby and the other Triple Crown races, the Preakness and Belmont Stakes. Tom Durkin, who has called the races on network television for the last decade, has decided not to renew his contract with NBC Sports. The reason? Stress and performance anxiety. We're going to talk with Mr. Durkin about that decision in a moment. First, let's listen to him calling the final stretch of the Derby in 2004.
And Smarty Jones is roused to the lead by journeyman jockey Stuart Elliott, and they have taken the lead away from Lionheart. Farther back, it's Limehouse and Imperialism, and here is the first undefeated winner of the Kentucky Derby since Seattle Slough in 1977. Smarty Jones has done it.
That's Tom Durkin broadcasting for NBC Sports in 2004. Mr. Durkin, how did you come to this decision to stop doing the broadcast?
Well, it's just a general, you know, for 3 months a year, I'd be walking around with this pit in my stomach and almost a sword of Damocles over my head. You wake up worrying and you go to bed worrying and you're just on edge and, you know, the stress leads to bad health. And I'm 60 now. And I just thought, you know, let's just get rid of the stress. I mean, I tried everything I could to treat it with hypnosis, which I've been doing for 20 years.
We have some tape from the Kentucky Derby in 2009 when a horse came out of nowhere to win. Mind That Bird, 50-1 shot that year. I want to listen to you calling the end of that race.
Musket Man is coming hard down the center of the track, and Papa Clem's right there too. Down toward the inside, coming on through. That is Mind That Bird now is coming on to take the lead as they come down to the finish. And a spectacular upset. Mind That Bird has won the Kentucky Derby. An impossible result here.
We can hear the amazement in your voice there, but I'm wondering if that would be the kind of thing that would just give you nightmares, the idea that a horse could come out of nowhere, you can't remember who it is, who the jockey is, and you're missing a call.
Well, yeah, that was, of all the Derby calls, I think that's the one I wish I could have gotten back.
Well, everyone was surprised by that one, but I guess I'm curious if sort of broadly that would be the nightmare scenario for you that would just wake you up in the middle of the night before a race.
I have crazy nightmares. And most of the time I just can't get to the announcer's booth or someone has spray painted my binoculars and I can't see through
or
the lenses fall out of my binoculars or the horses started running underground. But one time in my subconscious mind, I was calling the Kentucky Derby and a Norwegian cruise liner came down the stretch. And I couldn't see the horses. Like, oh, my God. Those are big ships, too. Can't see many horses behind them.
Wow. That's amazing. It is interesting that you are still going to be announcing at the track at mm-hmm. Belmont and at Aqueduct in Saratoga. Is that a whole different thing for you, being the track announcer as opposed to being the race caller for the TV broadcasts.
It's like being a baseball player and you play 164 games a year. The Derby is like being at bat and you're down one run, the man's on second, the count's 3-2. It's the seventh game of the World Series. Mm-hmm. It's that kind of intensity that kind of stays with you for a long time.
Do you think that that will be a bittersweet thing when the Kentucky Derby is run on May 7th and you're watching not as the announcer but as a spectator? Is that going to feel funny?
I'm not the weepy type. I'm the only guy in the place that doesn't cry when they play my old Kentucky home. No, I'm comfortable with the decision, and I will watch it with a clear mind and probably $50 to win on Shackelford.
So an open mind and a whole lot less anxiety, I guess.
A lot less. And by the way, I'll be able to watch the Kentucky Derby actually sucking down a mint julep while the race is going on, so that's good, too.
Can't beat that. Well, Tom Durkin, we will miss hearing you on the broadcast for the Triple Crown races. Best of luck to you.
Okay, I hope you bet the winner.
We end this hour with Bob Mondello's latest movie recommendation for those of you who prefer your couch to the crowded multiplex. This week, he's championing a new DVD box set from a TV pioneer, the Ernie Kovacs Collection.
In 1951, almost no one had a TV yet, but anyone who did would have been surprised by what Ernie Kovacs was doing on it.
Many of you ladies have all of these knobs on your set, but I don't think all of us are aware of just how to use them.
On a string around his neck, Kovacs hangs a wooden board with four knobs and starts making faces.
You get to your horizontal picture and you turn it.
As he turns a knob, he twists his upper lip up to the right and his lower lip down to the left, managing a pretty close imitation of a 50s TV on the Fritz.
Not too far, Kurt. No, no.
Weird, right? In the button-down 1950s, Kovacs played with this new medium of TV while everyone else was still trying to figure out how it worked. He did blackout sketches years before Laugh-In, mock commercials decades before Saturday Night Live. Sometimes he went on national TV and just riffed.
What time is it? No fingers. Talk.
7:04:30.
I have 7:05:30 on my clock. Again, that's a very inexpensive clock.
Even planned sketches got upended, as in a bit where he was supposed to swallow the contents of a martini glass in one gulp, and when he did, was clearly surprised.
Somebody with a delicious sense of humor just put 2.5 ounces of straight gin in that.
Kovacs was never as big a hit with audiences as he was with the pros, everyone from David Letterman to Monty Python, who later used techniques he invented. Because his routines were hit and miss, his national ratings were less than stellar. So when he died in a car crash in the early 60s, NBC started taping over his show tapes to dub game shows. None at all would have survived if Mrs. Kovacs, singing star Edie Adams, hadn't bought them up. Happily, she did, so the Ernie Kovacs Collection has 13.5 hours of vintage only on TV comedy. Not always funny, but even 60 years later, intriguingly strange. I'm Bob Mondello.
For insight into financial news, we often turn to Wall Street broker Ted Weisberg. He's president of Seaport Securities, and we wanted to get his impression today of what Chairman Bernanke said at that news conference. Ted Weisberg, welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you.
And we all know that one verbal slip from a Fed chairman can send markets into a tizzy. You were watching today. What do you think? How did he do?
Well, I think he did just fine. I don't think there were absolutely any surprises, no curveballs. I think the conference was completely transparent, which I think it was intended to do. But I really don't think anybody expected to hear any answers from the Fed chairman other than what they got, which was basically a stay the course and there's no quick fix.
And bravo to you, Ted, for not using the cliche that the market does not like surprises in that answer. We did hear Chairman Bernanke end the news conference today saying he's very confident in the strength and dynamism of the U.S. economy in the long run. Do you agree with that assessment?
Well, I think so. I think, you know, every day we get up and the glass needs to be half full. If it's not half full, then obviously we have other issues. And I think that was clearly the message that he left everybody with. It was, I refer to it as a locker room message, you know, one more for the Gipper kind of thing. And but I think it was, I think it needed to be said. You know, the issue, of course, for the economy and for the Fed chairman is one of time. And unfortunately, most of us don't have a lot of patience, and we want quick fixes for very real reasons, especially if you're not working and need a job. Obviously, you're going to interpret what was said today a little differently than if you are working and don't need a job. But it's a time issue, and I think he got that message out pretty good, that they're going to stay the course. Things are working ever so slowly, but working in a positive fashion. And he thinks at the end of the day that his policies will, in fact, have very positive results for the U.S. economy.
Yeah. Chairman Bernanke was asked a few different ways about higher gas prices, higher food prices. Did you think he had much to add on that in terms of what the Fed could do about that?
Well, I'm not sure. Those are two great questions, because clearly that's where the rubber meets the road for most of us. It's either at the gas pump or in the grocery store. And though we know that when the Fed looks at core inflation, they conveniently are allowed to leave out energy prices and food prices. And, of course, that's what impacts most Americans on a daily basis. And clearly there is inflation at the gas pump and there is inflation in the grocery store. And unfortunately, I think the current Fed policies are to a certain degree stimulating that those increases in prices. And unfortunately, I guess you just can't have it both ways. And so he did say that he thinks that that what we see at the gas pump will subside going forward. And I assume that also means that the price increases that we've seen in the grocery store will also begin to abate and hopefully go the other way. But of course, that remains to be seen.
Yeah, I noticed he used some nautical terminology talking about inflation. He said if it becomes unmoored, was the word he chose, it would require Fed action. For now, he said inflation expectations are well anchored.
Right, unmoored. Yes, a nautical term, something I know well. set loose, afoot, right? I think clearly, I think that was in deference to the issues at the gas pump and in the grocery store, which every American feels on a daily basis in one form or another. And this is clearly going to be a problem for him going forward, because if the commodities and the energy sector don't cooperate for whatever reasons, and a lot of what's driving those prices are not in his control, then clearly they're going to have to shift gears and do something to help rein that in.
Okay, Ted, good to talk to you again. Thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That's Ted Weisberg, president of Seaport Securities in New York, talking with us about today's rare news conference with Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke.
In the TV news industry, this was the biggest rumor floating around in recent weeks.
Katie Couric might leave the CBS Evening News anchor chair. Katie Couric cutting the cord from CBS.
Katie Couric is reportedly leaving the CBS Evening News anchor chair. She was the first woman ever to anchor.
Yesterday, Katie Couric and CBS confirmed she really is leaving, which gave many commentators a chance to talk again about the death of the nightly network news, but not TV critic Eric Deggans.
Uncool as it sounds, I'll be the guy to say it out loud. The old-school network evening newscast still has value, and it should be saved. On this point, I have a mighty friend, David Letterman. At least it seemed that way when Katie Couric was on his show, and he couldn't believe she might bail on her job leading his network's news division.
It's not like it's a temp gig, you know?
No. 5 years isn't too temporary, though.
Look at Walter Cronkite. Look That's at Tom true. Brokaw. Look at Brian Williams. Look at Peter Jennings. Look at all these people. They get in it, they saddle up, and they ride into the sunset. Into the sunset!
Dave and I may sound like old fogies in an era of constant iPhone updates and 24-hour cable news, but we're not the only ones. Last year, an average 21 million people watched the Big Three Networks' evening newscasts every night. That's four times the number who watched cable news in prime time. So if the evening newscast is dying, it's a pretty slow death. And here's my short list of ideas CBS can use to turn this patient around.
We'll be right back with more Entertainment Tonight.
Dump Entertainment Tonight, or The Insider, or whatever syndicated show fills that 7:30 p.m. time slot on CBS affiliates. That's where network newscasts belong, when we're all working harder and getting home later.
Celia Hatton, CBS News, Tokyo.
Hire more reporters.
Dean Reynolds, CBS News, Lafayette, Indiana.
Seth Doan, CBS News, Toledo, Ohio.
During Couric's tenure, CBS News reportedly laid off 10% of its staff. And when she leaves, the network should have an extra $15 million laying around annually. That adds up to a lot more opportunities to hire new talent and boost news resources. Merge with CNN already.
Now, CNN's Anderson Cooper on assignment for 60 Minutes.
It feels like half of CNN's stars appear on 60 Minutes anyway, even if it's just Anderson Cooper and Sanjay Gupta. And CBS could benefit from the reporting muscle and 24-hour schedule that comes with a major cable news channel.
And good afternoon to all of you. I'm Diane Sawyer here at ABC News.
Time for CBS to own more stories.
ABC's Christian Amanpour made her way to the man at the center of the storm in Cairo, the embattled Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak.
When ABC's Amanpour nailed a crucial interview in Egypt, she slapped her news brand on a popular breaking story. It's been more than 2 years since Couric did something similar, exposing Sarah Palin's shallowness in a probing interview. And it's time for third-place CBS to show there's a new sheriff in town. It's true, the people watching these newscasts are slightly older, slightly more female, slightly less educated, the folks TV executives value least. But they're also still one of the biggest single gatherings for news consumers anywhere in television. It still makes sense to redefine these shows for a new generation rather than play it cool and lose a tradition old as television itself.
Eric Deggans is the TV and media critic for the St. Petersburg Times.